tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Oh yeah, ladies and gentlemen, the sound of that can only mean one thing. AfterBuzz TV throws it back here on Thursday, back into the village to discuss The Prisoner, the 1967/1968 Patrick McGoohan allegory. I am joined alongside Steph Z.
What's up, people? We've missed you.
We have. We took a week off. We're going to take off a week next week.
Blame Phil. Phil's going away. It's pretty lame.
You know, it's the time when people are going away, so it's getting a little bit tough, but that gives us more time to do research and bring great stuff. Meredith Placco will be joining us on this episode, hopefully, in a couple of minutes. She's coming in. She's coming in hot, coming as in they hot. Say.
You beat me to it.
All right, so okay. Today we're talking about Hammer into Anvil. What a symbolic episode of The Prisoner and Number Two, just in general. But let's talk overall impressions, Steph Z.
This was my favorite episode so far.
And why is that?
Because it was kind of the ultimate screw you a little bit. The ultimate a little bit. No, it was. There was lots of symbolism. There was lots of, I feel like we see Number Six using his smarts a lot better in this episode than maybe some of the previous episodes. And it just kept you on your toes.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And for those of you who may be just joining us for the first time ever, I can't imagine why you would be, but hey, thanks for joining. This will be a little bit spoiler-filled at times. We'll try to avoid as much as possible. However, of course, we will talk about the past episodes because we're not spoiling anything there. To give you kind of a quick overview, Chris Gregory wrote this episode. Some say because of his knowledge of history, it was supposed to represent more of authoritarianism.
Authoritarianism. Can you say that five times, Phil?
That's too many syllables.
Do it now.
Too many syllables.
Hammer. Are you the hammer or the anvil? Do it now.
On the anvil.
Okay.
And it, you know, it reminded that some say it's kind of like almost, the state of the village is almost like Nazi Germany. He kind of denies it to a lesser extent. I mean, obviously there's ties to it, but he's more drawn because of, kind of English school bullying, specifically as referenced in like the Thomas Hughes novels.
Right.
So that's where he drew his inspiration from. So he says.
Yeah, I don't see the Nazi thing. Especially in this episode where they take us through a day of like, there's water skiing. In this episode, more than any other episode for me, you saw this resort-like vacation aspect of the village. So for that to be, you know, represented or thought about that would be because of that thought, to me, that's just a little far-fetched.
We'll find out. But don't mix up. I think you're also mixing up with It's Your Funeral.
No, am I? Oh, we watched both.
Oh, man. Wait, this whole episode is copyright. Yeah, because remember, in 30 seconds, spoiler alert. In It's Your Funeral, they track him and they do a behavior check of Number Six, and he is screaming.
Oh, yeah.
He is doing this.
That was my fault. Yeah, but both episodes. See, this is why I only like to watch one at a time. Can't not be here.
But you are right in that sense that that there is tracking of behaviors regardless, but the prisoner uses it to his advantage.
Well, yeah, so. And that's even more so, you know, why it, in my mind, would not be Nazi-like, because you have a prisoner who's pretty much outsmarting who would be considered the dictator.
Well, hold that thought, because
holding.
I think we're going to argue
holding.
That. We're going to.
Really? Let's do it.
It's the question of the day. What's okay. The question of the day?
All right.
The title itself, Hammer into Anvil, references Goethe's Faust, play, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And the quote goes, "You must either conquer and rule or serve and lose. Suffer or triumph, be anvil or the hammer." That's the quote.
Yeah. All right.
Are you familiar with Faust?
Not a little bit.
Well,
I mean, a little bit. I mean, I wouldn't call myself an expert,
I'm not an expert either, but here's a little kind of description of it. Faust is the protagonist of a classic German legend. He is a scholar who is highly successful yet dissatisfied with his life, which leads him to make a pact with the devil, exchanging his soul for unlimited knowledge and worldly pleasures. So,
see, when I see that picture, I see Count Dracula.
I mean, that's the devil. I mean,
right.
German expressionism is...
Right.
Is
but it, I see Count Dracula more than the devil.
Fair enough. And for those of you listening on audio...
And that he's, like, around the side and going to bite his neck.
Well, okay. So for those of you listening on audio, by the way, you can download all these pictures. There is a link provided in the show description. But there's the devil slash Dracula is behind him. You have Faust. And then you have a mirror. And in there is the woman.
Right.
And the woman is his wife that he's trying to, you know, reconcile with. Not reconcile with, but she's gone.
Right.
What tie-ins can you just, even from the description that I gave you to this episode? Because there's many, and I'm going to get into them, but I just want to kind of start with you and what you gather.
Wow. Well, see, I'm such the literal person where I'm like, what is actually going on? Number one, it looks like he has six fingers. The devil.
Okay.
So for me, that goes back to number six.
Okay. Intriguing.
You know, I feel like, I don't know, you know, the fact that it's man maybe dancing with the devil and seeing someone that a love that has been gone, because there's no love in our story of the prisoner, I don't know how that one would play. Do you think that plays?
I had not.
You know, like, I've seen so many more pictures. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here, but I've seen so many more pictures that I feel would symbolize. I mean, you see, you know, is this the woman that just killed herself because of the husband? Is that, you know, what's happening?
That could be it.
That could be it. But I don't feel, to me, I don't know. Also, like, I get that there's probably a million. But for me personally, it wasn't like, oh, that's it.
All right.
I mean, for you, tell me, Phil.
To the romantic side of it, we haven't seen romance. But that doesn't mean the prisoner outside of the village doesn't have... you know, a love interest. Maybe that's why he's even more stoic in that respect, is because he's faithful. Who's to know?
No.
Okay.
I don't buy that. He would have mentioned it. He would have, there would have been some, I don't
fair enough. There's bigger tie-ins, and again, as we kind of go, I'm just, right now we're in the tease phase.
Right.
By the way, so number two, played by Patrick Cargill, he played Thorpe in Many Happy Returns, and there's a picture of him, for those who don't remember, and it's made no mention of their relationship whatsoever.
I kind of love that they're just like, okay, we need somebody up. Let's just call him back. We liked him.
That's it. So there you have it.
And is this, what order, what's the other order of episodes? Does this one come?
This one would still come later.
Okay.
No matter what.
Right.
The original script had the suicide be much more dramatic. The original script had the prisoner disguise his voice more when he phones in to the psychiatrist, but as it played, it makes number two seem almost as if he doesn't even trust his own ears. And the original script had a new number two arrive immediately right after the resignation and say to number six, "Be seeing you."
That's interesting. What are you doing?
All good. So that's what we have. I'm just checking every 2 minutes. I'm checking to see if Meredith's coming.
Oh, got it. I'm like, what are you doing, Phil? Don't leave me.
That's the life of number two.
I know.
I've accepted my fate in this.
I don't think you're number two.
We'll find out.
Well, at the end of this. Maybe in this episode.
Okay, so with the girl's suicide, right? We open up with this, and typically it's different than we normally get because, you know, there's much more. There's somewhat attempt at a romance by the girl. We don't really get it this time around. We just get her for the first scene, and there's a play, the song that he listens to, the play is of the same name, where everything happens, the plot happens, all because of this girl who you never see on screen. And so you can kind of parallel that to this, because as soon as she's the inciting incident, and after that we don't see her for the rest of the episode.
Right. Well, because she's dead.
We've seen dead before. In Arrival,
we had a
suicide, and look how that turned out. So let's not jump on that bandwagon just yet.
Right. Okay, fair enough.
But okay, but your thoughts on this whole, like, because it's a very different opening. It sets us up for a very different story.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of was a little bit shocked by it. I don't know that it was 100% necessary. I do like it. This episode had two deaths in it. It had this, and then they wound up killing a bird too, which to me was, you know, don't kill the messenger. And there was an unexplained death and a death where she took death into her own hands, which I think was very interesting. Which again is they wanted some sort of information out of her as well, which they didn't get in asking her, where is your husband? Is he still over there? He has some work to finish. So they're really trying to figure something out, but do they really want her, or are they trying to have her there in order to get to him? Which made me think, is it really the prisoner? I mean, you know, number six that they're after, or are they trying to get this information so that they can go then get someone else?
Yeah.
That's kind of all that went on for me when I was watching that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that it also – it just raises in general, like, still the question of sides has been brought up 800 times. And you know, you never know still who's – I don't think even, like, number two fully understands the side that he's ultimately on.
I think he thinks he's on his own side, though. I think he – no, not number two. Number six, I feel like, he thinks he's on his own side. It's him against everyone else.
Yes, obviously a very difficult. No, I would say that's true.
Right.
You know, which ultimately there's the parallels of number six and number two are just so evident tonight. Because you know, number two ultimately ends up being alone, which so is the prisoner.
Right.
You know, and that's, but he's obviously number six handles it much more gracefully. His journey through life, whereas number two reverts back to childhood.
Right, because if you think about it, what would it be like if number six was just, okay, I'm here. I'm going to play by the rules.
Well, that's what he does.
He does, but he doesn't. He's still always, there's always something happening. It's not, he's just not one of the village people. And you know what I mean? Like, there's always something happening. He's either trying to toy with number two. He's trying to escape. He's trying to figure this out. He's not just chilling. Like how we would see some of the other people in the village. Would they be then creating things for him to get upset about? Would they be doing more? You know what I mean?
I get what you mean. I mean, it's a thing that we talked about, ironically, with Many Happy Returns. When the shower wasn't working and things like that, he didn't have milk. He became acclimated to a certain lifestyle within the village, and when then that was disrupted, he didn't know what to do. And now he's even gone beyond that, where he's, because of his knowledge of the village, he uses it to his advantage to trick number two. And you can in some ways call him sadistic in that respect, because he took great pleasure in doing this.
True. And I wonder too now, from number six thinking he had escaped a few times, what if he really did get out? Would he trust it?
At this point, you know, I mean, that's actually a very good question. I don't know. Where would he go? I mean, it's almost ironic because...
Well, everywhere he's went is somehow still part of the village.
And that's, you're absolutely right. And so it almost becomes like, if you can't trust anybody, then where do you go? You go to your own little resort island. Well, then you pretty much still just end up in the village just under your own terms, and you're now number one that's creating your own, like, little haven.
Right. Which I don't think that there's anyone in the world, I don't know that you could function not trusting anyone. You know, like, I understand we all have our trust issues and our degrees of trust and degrees of, you know, our inner circles of people we let in. But could you imagine not thinking everyone in the world is out to get you? That's got to be crazy.
Absolutely. You know, and you kind of, it's based off of past experience, how much willing, you know, you're able to trust people. Obviously, some of it's learned from, you know, whether your parents or other people, like, hey, don't trust that guy, don't trust that guy. You know, obviously that stems into greater things such as racism, unfortunately, and sexism and other things, you know.
Yeah, this is really, that's kind of, this episode really touches on the huge things that happen in life, really.
Yeah.
All boils down. The Prisoner is, you know, the book of life in my book.
It is an allegory.
It is.
You know, so we were talking about sadistic and kind of deep down. Number two is ultimately, unlike the prisoner, insecure. I mean, deep down, the prisoner might be insecure as well, but haven't seen it.
But again, that's what happens in the world. You think about the people that have to be in the most control. You think about the people that mostly cut ties with people. You know, insecurity and fear are the two things that make us all divided. So that's very, again, I love how this show parallels present day, and it's timeless in that way. The most insecure people are the ones that want to have the most power so that they can feel some type of security, even though it's pretty much false.
Yeah, but it's anything, right? If you desire money, you will never have enough of it. If you desire beauty, you will forever be ugly.
Right.
Like, it's, you pick anything you want, and if that becomes your god or just like the thing that you desire,
right,
that's it. You're going to be a slave to it no matter what.
Yeah.
Now, Hammer into Anvil is the title episode. We talked about Faust. But, and we've talked about in the past Orwell, right? How this is kind of Orwellian. Well, ironically, it was George Orwell who said that there's a misinterpretation of this quote, because ultimately it is the anvil that breaks the hammer.
Right.
And that is clearly what happens in this, you know, the prisoner number six is assigned the term of anvil, and he breaks the hammer.
Right. Which I think is kind of like the David and Goliath, kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough.
Well, they don't expect him. They expect the person with the hammer is going to win, and he doesn't.
Yeah. But it makes sense, too. I mean, it you know, I paralleled it to, what's the term? An unbelievable force versus an unstoppable object. Like, who's going to win? Something that can't be moved or something that's just going to plow through everything?
Right. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I'm just going to double check that I'm right. But
I can keep talking if you need to read.
No, I found it. But so, well, I don't want to skip to it yet. But when we talk about the letter, that fake letter that he writes, I have something to add.
Okay. So speaking of, you know, we can kind of tie this into the greater sense, you know, as soon as this sort of happens, we're off, for lack of a better term, off to the races in these strange signals, right? We're toying with number two, and we're breaking them down from, and everything ties back to the idea of security, right? That's kind of the spark for the prisoner.
Security versus insecurity.
Nice. Like that.
Yep.
You know, we go through the various steps, just to kind of highlight them. We get the song, and the meeting at the village shop. Then we get the community radio message. We get the tally-ho. We get the pigeon and all that. But let's start with the song, and then kind of we'll build to the other stuff. Because the song, you know, he's looking for something that's different. And obviously, it's not there because it's the same damn song.
Right.
So no matter what, but then it
he just knows he's toying with them. He absolutely knows. You know, I feel like that's just, he absolutely knows. I feel like it's the same situation too when he wants to go and buy the cuckoo clock. I knew he was going for it just for the box.
Well, the cuckoo clock, but even how symbolic is that, is because he's making everyone go cuckoo.
Cuckoo. Yeah, he's making them go crazy. I mean, it was so brilliant. So brilliant, this episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead and talk about the message, because you like the letter.
I like the letter. Well, I like the letter for two reasons. I like it because again, this episode to me showed how spy-like he was. He knew he was being watched. He knew what they were going to do. He knew that if he wrote this letter, that it was going to make them think something. The letter pretty much says it makes them believe that he's reporting back to somebody about number two's behavior. And in the letter, it says X04. And which is crazy because I looked up X04 because it was killing me, this whole number thing. And X04 is a star approximately 960 light years away from Earth in the Lynx constellation. So it's just some crazy thing out in space. And he's doing, like, for me, that's kind of the mind game that he's playing. It's so far out there what they think he's up to that it's such a slap in the face that he's got them right where he wants them.
Absolutely.
So for me, that was very, I love those little things because they wanted you to almost believe that they knew what was happening, but it was so fun to be, you know, it was almost like the fourth wall was revealed to us because we knew it was happening and they didn't.
And that, well, a couple things from that. One of the things also on the letter, it said D6. So people read into that as Drake 6.
Right.
Tying back to, John Drake. Now, furthermore, the greater sense, in terms of an audience perspective, number two is reading way too much into everything, which is a play on us as an audience.
Right.
To the point that we have a podcast about it and we dissect every single episode to this level. It's like, oh, maybe we shouldn't.
Can we talk about the fact that number two in this episode is kind of the Hugh Hefner of number twos?
Wait, no, I think you're thinking of the It's Your Funeral.
Oh, again, I am.
I think It's Your Funeral is more of your favorite episode than Hammer and the Anvil.
No, it's not. It's just that was the last one I watched, so I keep going back to it. My bad. That was a spoiler. Sorry.
I don't think it really spoils much of anything, except that he looks like Hugh Hefner of the number twos.
He does. He did.
This number two, what would you compare this number to?
I don't know. He was very gullible. He seemed very gullible to me.
Hurt in his past childhood as a kid?
Yeah, but come on. We've all had a childhood.
Yeah, but some people handle it in certain ways and some people don't.
But that's very different than saying hurt in his childhood. It's how he handled it. We all grew up. We all had a, you know, no one, to my knowledge, no one had a perfect life. It's all how you handle it. And clearly this guy did not get a grip. This is one of those people that got a participation trophy.
Did he? Oh, man. I guess so.
He's very weak to me.
Yeah.
He's a very weak number two. He's the weakest number two.
Yeah?
Weakest, most gullible.
I could argue there's some weaker ones.
That we've seen already?
Yeah.
Who?
In ABC, you know, he couldn't even... He couldn't even do his own things. He just had to rely on his scientist.
Right, but he was still somewhat in charge. And he never questioned his authority. This guy let number six, this guy let the guy he's supposed to be controlling and figuring out information from completely control him. And his actions. And his results.
This is true. Well, you know, unless you want to kind of break down the signals more, you know, one of the greater things that came out of this, right, and why people kind of compare it to, you can compare it to the regime under Stalin, you can kind of compare it to Nazism, but in the sense that when you have this level of anxiety and everything's like supposed to be, you know, security, then you have the question of, okay, what is truth and what is not? And everyone's reporting each other, but it goes to even beyond that. When you report someone, now you're, as an individual, being questioned of, okay, why are you reporting this? What is your motive for doing so? And therefore, you know, everyone's on edge. You don't know the truth, much like that. And that's why through number two's own kind of initiative, he becomes a prisoner of his own self. I'm going to get you a better flip book so you don't.
I know. Sorry. I'm going to bring it on my iPad. I was just making sure. Sorry. I was completely sidetracked. I was totally just making sure that this was the first one that they had the trampoline fight in.
Yes. Yes, it is.
That was ridiculous.
What was, in terms of that, you know, it was a great It was a ridiculous scene.
It was great and it was ridiculous, but if you would have stopped the show right before that when they were challenging each other, or well, I'm going to challenge you, and said, okay, give me 5 types of challenges, give me 25 types of challenges, I would have never said, they're going to get on trampolines. Would you? Come on.
Although it is fun.
It's super fun, and I love it. And again, that exists nowadays, but it was very, very, who thought of that? I want to know.
It just goes beyond.
It's gymnastics. I mean, is that because there's, you know, Russians are good with gymnastics? I mean, what is, what's the tie-in? Why the trampolines? Out there, I want to know. If you guys know, why? Why?
It's just because it's funny. That's
but
why.
Someone had to be in that conversation. Like, okay, so what do you think they should do? Should they, you know, joust on horses? Should they? No, but trampolines. That's it.
Because you could go like the route of racquetball and stuff like that. But this is just so
racquetball's
out there.
Awesome.
It is, but it's more of a normal thing. This is who thought. It is very much a who thought of it.
Yeah.
Speaking of who thought of it, the numbers. Right? We get our little computer, and yep. We get the message from the prisoner and numbers. You're going down a path that I don't think you'll ever solve, but you want to figure out these numbers.
I know.
There's a sequence of numbers. What the hell do you think it means?
20, 60, 40, 47, 67, 81, 91, 80. No idea. I'm not even gonna try. I went up at 20, then 60 was, there was 40 in between, and then 47 and 67 plus, you know, 47 plus 20. Like, I did all these crazy math. Like, I was trying to Fibonacci sequence it, and it just didn't work out.
Fair enough.
But there's this, I'm telling you, there is, again, there's some, I think
you're reading too much into it.
But that's the whole point of our show.
It is.
Come on. There's got to be something with the numbers. The fact that these people are assigned numbers, the numbers have to play.
I mean, I'm assigned a social security number. Does it mean anything beyond that it is that it's just my social security number? And that's what I'm identified as rather than like Phil Svitek.
Right. But the reason you're defined that number is because you were at some point entered the country. You live somewhere. You've got it's not just like, oh, they don't just keep a specific counter. It's like divided. Like all people in New York, your social security number definitely starts with a different number than mine.
I get that.
You know, like there's little things of why you get that number. It's not just one counter that goes up. Like, oh, another person born. Where's the log? What number are we up to? It doesn't work that way. That like makes my point even stronger.
I don't know. I think it is what it is.
I think it is what it is.
And I think, okay, so I want to talk about this.
Let me have it.
The prisoner's trying to get people on his side, quote unquote, multiple times. It hasn't worked out. We've seen it in Checkmate. We've seen it in other things.
Right.
But the strategy today is very different. It was, it wasn't to get him on his side. It was just to get him off of number two's side. And that seemed much easier.
Right.
So we succeeded there. And that's almost weird, you know, because then which you got one side, another, and then just nobody.
Which, again, is something that plays very, in current day, it's a lot harder to get somebody to like what you like, but it's a lot easier to get somebody to dislike something that you dislike.
Yeah.
Which I feel is because we hold our cards so close to us, and it all goes back to our trust and security and insecurity. You like that full circle there, Phil?
I love that.
That was for you.
I love that. Speaking of full circles, we get the resignation of number two.
Right.
Is it similar to number sixes? I feel like I could draw parallels to it. Is this like perhaps the reason that ultimately number six resigned? And is he seeing himself in this? Because, as I mentioned,
oh, that's
number
funny.
Two
I didn't even think that. I would say no.
I would say no too, but you can't help but wonder, because again, the prisoner is alone. Number two is now alone.
Right, but it's so, you can tell that number two is not doing, he's almost doing this against his own will. Like, granted, he's the one doing it, but it's almost, there's a series of events. When you see number six, he's in his car, he's like free in his car.
That's his series of events, though.
Yeah, but I never. I like to try and tie random things together, and I would have never tied that together.
The criteria is the same, but it's just so very differently specific. You have to, what do they call it? It's all syntax.
I understand what you're saying, that it is very, you know, is this telling, you know, did someone outsmart number six? Did someone make number six feel like he was crazy? That's why he had to get out. But then again, if what they're looking for is the information of why he got out, that's a pretty lame wraparound tie-in.
Absolutely. But I just can't help. I can't help but wonder. I can't help but make the comparison. And I also now wonder, where is this number two going to go? A village? You know what I mean? Where do they send this kooky guy now?
He's going to come. He's going to be a worker.
So he's just still back in the village, just... It's almost like American Beauty. He just needs the least amount of responsibility possible.
Maybe he gets out.
Out where?
I don't know.
He knows too much information. He was second in charge, dead, in theory, of the village.
They should kill him.
That's a possible. That's it's a grave possibility. Pardon the pun. But it is what it is.
Right.
You know. So you have that and. Speaking of, you know, I said I would make the argument for Faust. I said, number six, you know, I feel like there's some people who say it, that he lost his soul to the devil by giving way to the village to destroy number six, to destroy number two. He has intimate knowledge of the systems. He refers to himself as number six for the second time. He says, music makes for a quiet mind, adopting the village lingo and using it against number 14. And he takes sadistic pleasure, as I mentioned, in taking down number two, which is a number two trait.
Oh, I think that's a little... No. I feel like he's just giving him a taste of his own medicine.
Yeah, but by doing that, don't you become what you hate?
No. That's a little dramatic. It's a little dark, Phil.
Well, then how do you... Practice makes permanent, so how do you get out of something that you repeat?
No, I feel like he was just trying to... I mean, again, we'll see in the next episode if this behavior continues, but I feel like he, at this point in time, had enough... He had an opportunity to show his smarts. And again, it's very, like, one episode, I know there's an order and a sequence, and I know that it's questionable.
There isn't.
The order and it, right. But it's not, you know, you have a lot of shows that, you know, little bit, the way one ends almost goes into the way the next one begins, and this series does not do that. But I'll, you know, we'll see. Well, I've already seen it, his behavior in the next episode, so I don't think, he's just trying to prove a point.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm not arguing necessarily, but you just have to be very careful of the syntax because on an overall surface level, it is different. And that's what you have to kind of, you know, in order – because I can compare you to many, many different people, but you could – you know, and you have made the argument.
There's only one Steph Z. I'm sorry.
And you have made that argument in the past, but right. We have to define why right. It is that you are different because, again, I could lump you in with, okay, you're a skater girl. You're right. This. You're this. Mm. You're that. You know?
I understand what you're trying to say, but to lump – there's a lot of categories people can fit into, but saying he lost his soul to the devil – is very different from putting him into a category like he's a number two, like he's trying to be a person of the village. I think that there's just a difference.
How about this? I'll spin it a little bit different.
All right, spin it.
And again, I'm not necessarily arguing it 100%.
No, I know. We like to talk about everything.
You as an, you know, in order to be an individual, you have to know how to be an individual. And, you know, so take, not soulless, but mindless.
But I don't agree with even that. You don't have to know how to be an individual. You just have to be yourself.
But here's the thing.
Because we're all individuals.
But there are people who just operate on a default human setting where they don't even think about the things that they do, why it is that they think the way they think.
Oh,
and all
absolutely.
That. And if you can't even do that, then I don't consider you an individual. You have to be aware. Like, if you get angry, why do you get angry? If you get happy, why do you get happy?
No, that's an individual, but that's an ignorant individual. Still an individual.
No, they're a mindless individual to me.
Still a mindless individual. Still an individual.
They're part of the greater whole.
I'm just saying. I see what you're saying, but that person still is an individual. We might not agree with the way that they think, process. They may not think, process, but they're still an individual.
All
just right. One that deserves a swift kick in the butt.
Fair enough. One of the quicker trivia things, there was the red phone is back from ABC, right? Which German expressionism comes back, and it's very much fear. It's the authority. It's insecurity / security. I love that, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
No Rover!
I miss Rover.
No Rover. We'll get him back soon. And for the first time in The Prisoner, the tally-ho actually makes sense. Because it always used to have the headline.
I saw that. That was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. It usually has the headline and then jumbled words, and this actually made
sense. So is that saying that this episode makes sense and all he has to do is outsmart them and he will get free?
I don't know. Did he get it free?
No, but, he just has to go through a couple of them.
Yeah. All right. Stephanie, anything else that you want to kind of sort of hit upon that we may not have hit upon in this episode? And as I promised, Meredith Placco, I promised Meredith Placco, but no Meredith Placco today.
That's okay. No, I feel, we touched upon a lot. You know, I feel that I did like the cuckoo clock and how the whole bomb squad had to come. I feel like that was a little ridiculous and entertaining. This episode was entertaining. It was more entertaining than some of the other ones in past for me.
It is entertaining, but speaking of that, you also kind of have to be careful in real society because, for the sake of security of our nation or anything like that, you can be a sadistic person and, calling a bomb threat at a school, at an airport, whatever the case may be, and for your own pleasure, just kind of do it that way and whatever, it's part of a greater thing. No, it's not. It doesn't have to be.
No, I'm not saying,
I'm not going there.
But I don't think that calling it a fake bomb threat is at all a good thing. But I feel that for him, it was a distraction in a way to get something else done. And he was successful in it. And it was kind of entertaining that he was always a couple steps ahead.
Indeed. So next week we are doing...
No, not 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today we are doing It's Your Funeral. We will take a break next week. We're going to catch up. We're coming up on the home stretch here with The Prisoner. Hope you guys have been enjoying it. If you're just joining us or hey, maybe you're joining us in the future, enjoy it. Let us know your comments. Let us know your thoughts. That's why the show has survived for almost 45 years. We're coming up on the 45th anniversary soon. Who knows? You might be listening to it for the 50th. I don't know. But let us know your thoughts. That's how we surpass time and space.
Yes, do it.
And also for better interaction, more direct interaction, the people can follow you, Steph Z, at...
You guys can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Periscope at IAMSTEFZ. Keep the conversation going. I'd love to talk to each and every one of you.
Perfect. And, of course, follow us here at AfterBuzz TV, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're on YouTube. We're on SoundCloud. We're on iTunes. We're everywhere you can probably imagine that we are at. And we'll see you next time for It's Your Funeral. Be seeing you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.